Hello and welcome to episode 19 of the Bunt to the Gap podcast. I am Dave. I am joined by Adam in the Bunt Cave.
Hey, Dave.
And not by Sweet Nick this week. Nick is out celebrating his birthday. Happy birthday, Nick. But he will be joining us from the field a little bit later on in the episode. Also later in the episode, we'll be joined by Jack Connis of BP Milwaukee. He'll stop by to preview the home opener series with the Brewers. That's coming to you on Tuesday. So episode 19 is brought to you by the number of walks allowed by Joe Biagini last year. Joe the Genie, as we nicknamed him in episode 006, only allowed 19 walks on 67.2 innings pitched last year. That is a walk rate of just 2.5 over 9 innings. So Joe Biagini, still pretty good and looking pretty good this year too. So Adam, first week of baseball, what did you see? What did you think? Are you sounding the alarm bells yet?
I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet, but based on what I've seen, I'm not going to lie, I have pulled a little bit of a Sweet Nick in the first week. In that I've only watched maybe two complete games.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't mean baseball complete games. I mean I've fully watched two games. And some other ones I've been distracted for. But based on what I've seen, I have not liked Aaron Loop. But that's just, it's, you know, set in my DNA, I think.
Sure. Can't change your spots.
I mean, losing a couple players to injuries kind of burned us, right? So J.P. Howell is now in the DL.
J.P. Howell's gone.
Josh Donaldson just today.
Potentially.
Reporting on Sunday.
Yep. Josh Donaldson might have left the game, Sunday's game against the Rays, with potentially some type of calf injury, it seemed like. No update on his status yet, but if the Jays lose him for any extended period of time, they can get into a pretty deep funk rather quickly.
I mean, they already look like they're in a funk.
Yeah.
But, holy. I mean, I couldn't have foreseen 1-5.
Mm-hmm.
If you had told me that, as of today, the Jays would have been tied with Atlanta and Seattle for the same number of wins.
Yeah. I would have believed that, actually.
But then if you told me that it was only one win.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's part of the problem. I think a lot of the experts had the Mariners and the Jays as the wildcard team. And I would have believed that the Braves could have gotten off to a hot start.
Yeah.
So Francisco Liriano pitched Friday night. He threw 35 pitches. I counted only 9 of them in the actual strike zone. Only induced 6 swings by Tampa Bay Rays opponents. And that led to 5 earned runs and a 1.35 ERA. That is 1.35 ERA. He faced 8 batters in 1/3 of an inning. Did not last very long. Frankie didn't look very sharp on Friday.
Now, do you chalk that up to Russ maybe not stealing as many strikes as Jared Saltalamacchia did for him?
So, I actually looked this up on Baseball Prospectus's called Strikes Above Average.
Yeah.
But Jared Saltalamacchia is actually among the top 20 or something like that, whereas Russ is towards the bottom. So, I know these are still early stats and they'll probably progress a bit, I assume, for both of them.
Yeah. And just for our listeners, actually, Saltalamacchia is currently rocking a .007 positive called mm-hmm. strikes above average and .1 framing runs already accumulated.
Yeah, so where is he? How does he rank in terms of the league? Because he was high-ish up there, a lot higher than Russ, who was, I think, in the probably bottom 20 catchers.
Yeah, so Jared Saltalamacchia is actually currently ranked 19th in terms of called strikes above average. Number one is Martin Maldonado. And in terms of framing runs, where is he here? He is at 22 on that top list. So not doing too badly.
I mean, he's only had the one start, has he?
I guess, yeah.
So,
And we were talking about how he wasn't very good at framing.
It didn't seem like it, but so who knows? I imagine that regresses, and I really figure Russ will climb out of the basement a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was more so that Frankie couldn't hit his spots, or it could have been a lot of things. It could have been the approach by the Rays hitters to just not swing at anything. Like, 6 swings he induced on 35 pitches. So I don't know if that was just he wasn't throwing, like, he threw 9 pitches in the strike zone. So there had, like, he obviously wasn't having very much success locating the fastball. And because of that, nobody was willing to swing at the off-speed stuff. So they just sat on, you know, they just sat in hitters' counts and waited for a pitch that was hittable.
Yeah.
And then the game today, Sunday, the Blue Jays also lost. We saw another instance of Steven Souza acting like a bit of a hothead, I guess, against a Jays veteran. Or so last year it was that Souza was a little offended that...
Was it Tulo? Russ.
It was Russ that said something behind the plate, said something like, oh, you just missed that or something like that.
And he took offense to
it. And so he had a kind of a bit of a late slide against Tulowitzki, and Tulowitzki took offense to that. And benches cleared, but nothing really happened. But I wonder if it was more so just some frustrations boiling over for the Blue Jays.
Today it was more of a, he slid pretty late into second base with one of his legs up, and his other foot kind of hit Tulo's foot, and Tulo kind of just stalking down to him, and then Kevin Cash got into a thing.
Well, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so there was the tensions were a little bit high in today's game, as Buck Martinez said, but...
Understandably so, though. If you're the Jays, you're frustrated, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully a day off Monday and then a home game in Toronto, first home game of the season, is against a team like the Brewers, who, as you'll understand when we talk to Jack Connes, don't have a lot of potential for winning a lot of games this year. Hopefully that does enough to reset the Blue Jays. So after all of that, after Marco Estrada locking himself in a room last night and then listening to his happy song today, which we don't know what happy song it is, but Adam thinks he's figured it out. He's pretty sure it's
Baby Elephant Walk by Henry Mancini.
He's pretty sure it's Baby Elephant Walk. After all of that, Marco Estrada was nonetheless rocked today.
Yeah, you know why? Because everybody found out what his happy song was. It was no longer a secret.
Well, when it was a secret, do you think the word got out from the Bunch the Gap podcast that he was losing to...
We got in his head. Wait for the good part. All right, play us off, Henry.
I was going to say, 5 earned runs in 5 innings, 3 home runs. Yeah, maybe he couldn't find his disc man that had Baby Elephant Walk in it today. Maybe that's what happened.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with Jack Connes of BP Milwaukee.
Okay, welcome back to the Bunt to the Gap podcast. Joining us on the pod is Jack Connes of Baseball Prospectus Milwaukee to give us a preview of the Milwaukee Brewers ahead of the home opener on Tuesday, April 11th. So, Jack, the last time the Brewers played in Toronto was July 2nd, 2014. The previous day, on July 1st, Marco Estrada pitched for the Brewers, Drew Hutchison pitched for the Blue Jays, the Brewers played Lyle Overbay at first base, and the Jays played Juan Francisco at third base and Munenori Kawasaki at second. So what I'm getting at is that both teams have had a divergent path since then, and both share a commonality in having undergone a front office overhaul since that time. What can you tell us about David Stearns, and what is his style like in contrast to Doug Melvin's?
Yeah, so Stearns came into play, what was it, 2 years ago now. Melvin, prior to Stearns, he was your, you know, your typical old school guy, and, you know, baseball in the past decade or so has moved on to that analytical approach, and I guess the Brewers are still behind in that sense and still doing that old school, you know, not really breaking down the numbers kind of thing, and that's kind of where they were stuck, and there wasn't really much hope for years ahead, and they wanted to get out of that. So that's when Stearns came in, when he was the assistant GM with the Astros, who were, you know, one of the first couple of teams to be part of that analytical revolution. So that's where that whole, you know, hiring and the reason behind it came into play. So with Stearns at the helm for the Brewers, what they have done in just these past couple of years is acquire a ton of, and he says it all the time, just a lot of young, controllable talent. And a lot of this young, controllable talent, not even young, maybe even more so just controllable talent or talent that has been overlooked, like a Junior Carrera or a lot of indie league players, guys that might have been overlooked, but will provide value to the team. I know if you go on Baseball Prospectus and look at Pecota projections, I think the Brewers were one of the only teams, I forgot what exactly it was, but almost everyone in the whole entire team, even bench players, were projected for one win, at least one win above replacement, but they didn't have like anyone worth more than three wins or something like that. You know, it was just like it was a team of sort of kind of above average players, but no superstars. And I'm not sure baseball has seen that, you know, recently. You usually have stars and scrubs or just a bad team or, you know, whatever the case might be. So I think this is one of the first times they've been able to see, you know, a ton of 1 to 2 win players on a team and see how it's, going to pan out. So I think for the time being, that is the strategy. And the hope is to accumulate as many 1 to 2 win players as possible. And then with the prospects in the system, you know, you hit on a couple of them, they turn into 5-6 win players, coupled with a ton of 1 to 2 win players, and then you have a playoff team.
So David Stearns' Wikipedia page says he was born in 1984/1985. So there aren't many ways that this is possible. So I don't know if you know which one it is. And is this just a case of another baseball GM being secretive about freaking everything here?
That is a great question. I don't even know the answer to that one. I had to come. Wow, that's pretty good. I just hopped on the Wikipedia page now. Yeah, born, not even a date or not even, you know, a month and a day. Just 31 to 32 years old.
Is he that young?
Yeah, he is that young.
They're definitely right about 1 in 2 years. Which one it is, I guess I don't know either. But that is strange. Yeah, no, he's a young guy. But yeah, I know. It always seems like the baseball front offices are so secret. I guess it even gets as secretive as not even knowing the age of the GM. So, no, good find.
The Cardinals probably know it, though.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. They knew that years ago, of course, especially since he was with the Astros. So they knew all about him.
I wonder if it was just some reporter asked him and he said, well, maybe it was 84, maybe it was 85. And nobody ever bothered to follow up. Someone was like, okay, that's a fine answer. I'll move on.
My best guess is probably like, all right, when did you graduate from college? And, you know, it says right here, he graduated in 2007 from Harvard. So they're probably like, oh, let's do the math. Was he a January birthday, December birthday? You know, it depends. And then, oh, okay, whatever. He's 31 or 32. We'll just go with that.
So Pecota has the Brewers winning 77 games and tying the Cardinals for third in the division, although that might have changed as they update the projections. But Steamer has the Brewers projected to win 70 games in 2017. So which do you think is more likely, and how accurate do you think either of those are?
This Brewers team's assemble, it's pretty volatile in what direction they might go to. You know, I highly doubt they have any sort of playoff chance. I did just write something recently. If, you know, X, Y, and Z went according to plan, maybe they have a chance, but that's pretty far-fetched. But the lineup, the Brewers lineup is pretty good, I would think. You know, Eric Thames came over and he's, you know, small sample size. We're only a week into the season, but he's looked pretty good. And then Travis Shaw acquired in the Tyler Thornburg trade with Boston this offseason. He's looked pretty good as well. And then, you know, they have a decent amount of prospects in the lineup that could pan out and they could provide quite a bit of offense. So I don't think offense is the problem for the Brewers. And I think they have a playoff caliber offense, if you could say. You know, Jonathan Villar might repeat last season, or Ryan Braun continues kind of his career. But the pitching staff is a huge problem for the team. They have, you know, at best a ton of threes, at worst, you know,
all fives.
Maybe all fives and not even fives. That's just kind of how it is. And then the bullpen's pretty atrocious as well. So they're a team that's probably going to score a lot and a team that's probably going to give up a lot. And I think it's probably more so they're going to give up a lot more than they score. So, yeah, you know, probably 74, 75. But yeah, I mean, it could certainly be as low as 70, as high as 78, or, and I think it was the Twins last year. What, the Twins won 59 games, I think, or something crazy. It was awful. But the year before, they won, I think, 81. I think they were a 500 team the year before.
Yeah, they were pushing for a playoff spot that year, right?
Yeah, exactly. Come September, I know they're in it. So I think the Brewers are in the case where it could, you know, if, I guess you could say about every team, but I think the Brewers more so, you know, if they get a couple good starts out of a couple good pitchers, it could go right. But then Junior Guerrero, you know, their ace, quote unquote ace, he's out at least 6 weeks. He pulled his, I think, what, quad or calf? I forget, one of the two in the opening day start. So they're already down one in a bull or in a starting rotation. It's, I don't know, pretty pathetic, I guess. So I guess we'll have to see how the rotation pans out.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I was actually going to follow up on that, given that I have a vested interest because he was on my fantasy team. but now I'm going to drop him.
Yeah, I think what they said, 6 weeks minimum, and who knows, his peripherals from last year, and it's so hard to tell with those guys. He's 32 now or something like that.
He's older than the GM.
depending on what year you pick.
Yeah.
That's right. How well do you envision Eric Thames doing this season based on what you've seen in spring training in the first few games?
So far, I think he will project out pretty well. I know projections, depending on what projections you look at. I know Pakoda, for instance, was down on Thames. He was going to be a negative warp player. But if you look at projections, you know, with Steamer or Zips or Fangraphs, he was more of a, you know, 1-2 win player. I think he can transition well. And he's now, versatility-wise, he is a first baseman. How good of a first baseman, who knows? But he's already, I think he started two games already in the outfield for the Brewers. Like, how that pans out, I'm not entirely sure. But with the bat, while he might strike out a lot, he is a guy with plate discipline and patience. And the Brewers, I think this last season, I know they led the league in strikeouts, or at least strikeout percentage, but I'm pretty sure they were either one or two in walks or walk percentage. That's kind of the strategy they have taken under Stearns. So I know Thames will be a guy, he'll have some pop. He's shown it so far and to some extent. And yeah, I think he's got three or four walks to begin the season. It's not like that transition over from, you know, a totally different league where you see a guy who still can't walk and has 12 Ks and it's a disaster to begin with. He's shown plate discipline. I know even in spring training as well, he was able to manage quite a few walks. So do I think, I mean, he's not going to be what he was in, you know, KBO and hitting 40 dingers a year. That's probably not going to happen. But the ballpark they play in of Miller Park, I think will play to his strengths. And yeah, you could probably see a slash line of, you know, 250 on base, 350-ish. You know, he'll generate quite a few walks, hit quite a few home runs. But, you know, big picture, and Chris Carter was their first baseman last year, and he was not a particularly productive player. So I'm pretty confident at least Eric Thames will be an upgrade there. So I think what we've kind of gone back to, Stearns just slowly upgrading each position. And once again, it's another position upgrade for the Brewers.
So were you surprised when they released Chris Carter? Because it seemed like they could have carried him at least until the trade deadline and maybe tried to dangle him in front of some teams.
Yeah, no, initially you would think that was the case. And you'd be like, wow, you know, what they could tender him for. I forgot how, $8 million I think it was.
Yeah.
And the Brewers payroll is already, I forget what the exact number. I think it's second lowest in the league right now, but it's pathetically low and they don't spend any money and yet they still have great attendance. I mean, that's a conversation for another day. So yeah, you would think they would bring in Carter just for the fact they could flip him and, you know, gain prospects. And that's kind of been their MO since Stearns has arrived. But so initially, yeah, it was surprising, but to see how the offseason played out and how, you know, big power hitters that can't play any defense, how they were all pushed out of the market, basically, like a guy like Mark Trumbo. You know, they have such difficult time finding jobs. It was surprising to see Carter only signed for $3 million. I know he's not really a great baseball player, but yeah, I mean,
we still a guy that hit 40 home runs, though.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Like 42, or led the National League, right?
Led the National League. So yeah, finding right-handed power is, you know, not easy to come by. So you figure someone would at least take a chance on them. But I feel like just the analytical age we're in, teams realize that, you know, he only hits 200, strikes out a million times, is on base isn't great, and he can't play first. Do you really want those 40 home runs, you know, and sacrifice all those other things? I guess that's how it played out. So I think the Brewers are much more comfortable rolling the dice on a guy like Eric Thames. And then more recently, Jesus Aguilar, who is their project they brought over from the Cleveland Indians, and he's shown off some skill in spring training and so far this season. So I think the combination of Thames and Aguilar for the Brewers this year will be much more productive than a guy like Chris Carter.
Mm-hmm. And just for our listeners, the Milwaukee Brewers do in fact have the lowest opening day payroll, according to Forbes, at $60,800,000.
That's suspicious, though, because the Padres have like a high school team basically playing for them.
The Padres are officially at 61. Yeah.
Was it? Oh, I swore the Padres were lower. Actually, I think a buddy, a coworker of mine, he is not familiar with baseball whatsoever. And he said, he's like, oh, I read an article yesterday. The Brewers have, I think it was 17 guys on payroll making the minimum salary.
Wow.
So 17 of the 25. And I didn't double check that, but that sounds probably correct just for the numerous guys on the team that you've either never heard of or are still extremely young. That sounds about right to me. So maybe it does make sense. But yeah, $60 million, and it's strange. You know, the Brewers have a top at least 10 attendance every year. So money's not a problem. They just haven't chosen to spend it yet.
Yeah, it sounds like David Stearns is mimicking my baseball manager simulator. Because I did that for quite a long time, and then I just made bank, and the Jays won the World Series in 2029. So
there you go.
If he's playing the long game.
That's not a bad idea.
The problem I have with opening day payrolls is that it's so hard to find consistent numbers. So I know Forbes had different numbers than Cots Contracts has, and Spotrac, they all have different numbers. So who really knows what the opening day payroll is for either the Padres or the Brewers? Right. Moving back to the Brewers, based on your knowledge of probable pitchers Willy Peralta and Chase Anderson, what kind of things can they do to quell the Jays' offense? What are some things Jays fans should look for if either of them get into trouble?
Yeah, so Willy Peralta and Chase Anderson, I guess they're completely different pitchers. Peralta, he's always been a pretty high velocity, high fastball guy, and last season that was an issue for him early on in the year. He was only throwing 94, 95 consistently, and he got sent down for a period of time because he was performing so poorly. But he got called back up, and he was starting to hit 96, 97 again, which is where he kind of sat earlier on in his career. And that second half of the season last year, he performed real well. I think his FIP in the second half of the year was like 3.75. I'm not saying it's elite by any means, but certainly better than what it has been. And Peralta's been projected, the hopes are to be a middle rotation kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, his first start as well, I think he went 5 scoreless against Colorado, if I remember correctly. And, he has looked well, so he's a guy the Brewers are really hoping, if he can't put it together this year, he might just probably move on to a bullpen spot, which actually there's a few people out there that see him as he could be a pretty good 7th, 8th inning guy, but there's much more value having him in a rotation performing well. So that's kind of about Peralta. As for Chase Anderson's a guy that I thought I maybe initially liked when he came over from Arizona last year in the Gene Segura trade, but he, even in Arizona, he seemed like a guy with quite a bit of potential, and he's just never, ever put it together. And I remember I was looking at numbers from Anderson last year. In the second half, his numbers, at least ERA-wise, they looked pretty well, and that maybe he had turned the corner. But I looked a little deeper in his left-on-base percentage for Anderson, and the final 2 months of the season were both 90-plus percent, which is absurd and unsustainable, and he was getting a lot of luck. So Anderson's a guy that I'm not sure how I feel about. I think he's probably a nice pitcher to have on a rebuilding team, and that's, hopefully something, clicks and he becomes relatively decent. But I don't really foresee that with Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I looked again, like his first start this year, his ERA looks great, but his left on base percentage was 100% again. There's just things that won't sustain over a long period of time, and he hasn't really changed anything in his own mechanics or anything like that to show that there might be hope in the future.
Okay, so I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you about Keon Broxton. Is the Keon Broxton hype real?
Also, would you tell us about his ability to dodge baseballs?
That's right, yeah. How's he doing, actually, right?
Yeah. No, that was a pretty scary pitch to the face he took a couple days ago. But luckily, he had that... what do they call it? A C flap, I think it is now. Blocking his face. Yeah. So that certainly helped. But I think I am a buyer into the Keon Broxton hype. Once again, small sample size, but the start of this year has been pretty poor for Keon Broxton. So I think maybe not everyone's aware, but, you know, Keon Broxton was the top of all the exit velocity charts. You know, he was sandwiched in between guys like Miguel Cabrera and David Ortiz and, Stanton as well. So there is those things like, wow, this guy can hit the ball hard. So he has that going for him. One of the kind of downsides to he hits the ball hard, but he often hits the ball hard on the ground. He's a ground ball hitter. Okay. You know, with the exit velocity and fly ball era we might be in now, that's something it'd be nice he could transition to. But he does get away with the ground balls due to his speed, so that helps in that sense. But when StatCast came out with their defensive data this past offseason, kind of like that 5-star, 4-star, 3-star play, you know, kind of depending on, what is it, hang time and distance traveled, or I think those were the two. Broxton showed he was atop of a lot of those charts, making a lot of 5-star plays and 4-star plays, and his percentages looked good. And watching him last year, he seemed like he could roam center field pretty well. Yeah, he's a big guy, long legs, great speed. Seems like he can cover a lot of ground out there. So I think, I don't know, this is, I guess, a tough position. I think Broxton could, it's hard, he's, there's so much like volatility with him. Who knows what might happen, but I think he could eventually maybe be a 3-4 win player down the road if he can, and he's got a super high strikeout rate, but he's another guy with pretty, you know, great plate discipline as well. He walks quite a bit, so that helps out there. He can steal bases. So if he can manage to cut down on that strikeout rate, provide decent, you know, offensive numbers, steal some bases, and then play well above average defense, I think that's maybe what you can expect on the plus side of Keon Broxton moving forward. And I think he's a guy that might be able to reach that potential. So super, superstar down the road, I don't know. But I think he could become, you know, an everyday regular for, you know, a playoff contending team.
Cool. So, Jack, thank you. You've been very gracious giving us your time. One last question before you go. This should be an easy one, hopefully, for you.
Yes.
Who's your pick for the Brewers star of the series against the Jays?
Let's go with, let's do a little Eric Thames. We talked about him earlier.
Yeah, get some payback.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do Eric Thames. And if I can take a second, let's go with maybe a Travis Shaw in there too. I know I'd mentioned both of them earlier, but
yeah.
I expect maybe a couple home runs from the two. I know Stroman's pitching one of the games, so that kind of maybe hurts my chances. Maybe Jonathan Villar performs a little better, but yeah, sure. Let's say Thames and Shaw, and maybe the Brewers, you know, win a 10-9 ball game up there.
Well, yeah, and Travis Shaw is familiar with the Jays pitching and hitting at Rogers Center, so that's a good pick. So thank you, Jack. Jack Connes is a writer for BPM Milwaukee. You can follow him on Twitter at Jack Connes. That's C-O-N-N-E-S-S. He also writes for The Other League. You can look them up at otherleague.com and follow them on Twitter at Other League. Be sure to subscribe to the BPM Milwaukee podcast in the iTunes store or on your podcatcher. Jack, is there anything else you'd like to promote?
No, that's about it. I think you guys covered it all. Make sure you guys, you know, check out BPM Milwaukee and especially the podcast as well. But yeah, I really appreciate you guys having me on tonight.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Okay. So another thank you to Jack. We will be right back on the Bunt of the Gap podcast after this break. Okay, welcome back to the Bunt of the Gap podcast. We are going to be listening to Sweet Nick in the field. Nick, what do you got for us this week?
Hello, everybody. This is producer Sweet Nick with another issue of Sweet Nick in the Field. So let's talk about that game on Saturday. Blue Jays versus Tampa Bay on April 8th. Blue Jays lost 3-2 in 11 innings. And this game really did just point out all the issues we're going to have with a bullpen this year. No Roberto Osuna, still on the 10-day DL. So our closer is Jason Grilli, I guess. If it's not Joe Biagini, I'm not sure.
That's true.
Biagini came in the bottom of the 8th and allowed one run to blow the save. He did pitch the 9th also and didn't allow a single run, taken into extras. And then we saw Jason Grilli, and he pitched a scoreless inning. So we go to the bottom of the 11th, tied 2-2, and we bring in Casey Lawrence. Who the hell is Casey Lawrence? And what is he doing on our pitching mound? I mean, we knew this bullpen was shallow. We knew after Roberto Osuna, there wasn't a lot of talent going on. But Casey Lawrence is a career AAA player. This is his first big league outing ever. He's now got a 0-1-1 record with a 13.50 ERA. And there's not a lot of options in this bullpen. I mean, we already saw Bijan, we already saw Grilly. So who are you left with? Tapera, Joe Smith, God forbid Aaron Loop. It's a struggle we're going to have. And Roberto Osuna will come back and hopefully will be healthy. But he's one pitcher. He's just a closer. And we're going to go to extra innings again. We're going to go to the bottom 11th again, tied. And we're going to need someone to strike him out. Casey Lawrence, and I don't know if this is on him or our John Gibbons, but this was his line for the bottom of the 11th. He let go a double on the first batter, then a sacrifice bunt, then two intentional walks to Corey Dickerson and Kevin Kiermaier. Okay, I can see that. But you're intentionally walking two guys to load the bases and bring up Evan Longoria, a guy who notably smashes on the Blue Jays every time he's out there. Now, luck, skill, I don't know, but Casey Lawrence got Evan Longoria to strike out. So, hey, okay, now we're on track. Two outs, and bases loaded. Up comes Brad Miller, and he walks him. Walks in the winning run, ends the game 3-2. Look, I'm a Toronto sports fan, so I'm pretty used to pessimism. I mean, a day after the Leafs clinched a spot in the playoffs, so maybe I can feel a little bit more hopeful for future. But this bullpen is going to flaunt these shortcomings again before the season's over. This bullpen was an issue all through the offseason, and you know they brought in Joe Smith, and they brought in J.P. Howell, and neither of those guys really give you confidence. I'm a fan of the starting pitching. I've been adamant about that since the beginning. I think we have one of the best top fives in baseball. It was 2-1 for the Jays when Aaron Sanchez left. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's going to keep them in games late for the whole season. I think the starters are too. But this bullpen can't be left with no margin for error. 2-1 is not enough to trust this bullpen to come in late innings. It needs to be 5-1. It needs to be 6-1. The Blue Jays are going to have to, if they're going to win, they're going to have to go back to their 2015 ways. They're going to have to score 11 runs a game if they want to win.
That's what they should
because
do.
Because this bullpen is showing that it's a close game scoring. Is not in their favor. Going through the extras, the tie game, when you've already burned Osuna or Grilly or Bijan or even all three, you're going to have to go to guys like Casey Lawrence or Ryan Tapera or Aaron Loop. And none of those guys inspire confidence in you. So, I don't know. This is my pessimistic rant. I hope it gets better. I don't see it happening, though. So I guess you're hoping for a change. You're hoping someone gets brought in. Or the batters turn it on and we're hitting 5 home runs a game. And we never have to worry about closers and bullpens. That's what I'm hoping for. But Roberto Osuna, please come back soon. Please be healthy. Hopefully you don't have to pitch another 74 innings this year. But it's quite obvious that the Blue Jays need you. And we might have to ask that from them. And we might have to ask that from Bijan and Grilly, because we're looking like a 3-man bullpen and one of those three is 40 years old and the other one's a Rule 5 pick. And Roberto Osuna has had Tommy John surgery and is already dealing with injury issues at the ripe age of 22. So we'll see what comes up. And here's hoping to a lot of dingers and no close games.
Yeah, and like just to add to what Nick was saying, Casey Lawrence was quoted as saying that he's a control guy. Mm-hmm. I think right on, somebody said that on the broadcast on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of ironic because as he was, I guess first of all, he walked in the game winning run the night before. But
he's a control guy in AAA.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, put the guy in to face Evan Longoria. And who else was it? Who walked in the...
Was it Miller?
Brad Miller, yes. So put him in to face, you know, some of the best hitters in baseball. Well, I was saying Brad Miller's the best hitter in baseball, but, you know, he's a guy that's pitched at AAA his entire career, and there he is in the bottom of the 11th inning.
First call-up, high-stakes situation.
Yeah.
I mean, anyway, today he also walked a couple guys.
So do you agree with Sweet Nick? Do you think the Blue Jays should just start scoring 11 ones or 11 runs? Yeah,
I agree. Nick is completely right. They should just start mashing again. Make baseball fun.
Yeah, no, I think that's what. Yeah, like I don't know why they've been trying to win games like scoring 3 runs, but like I think they should just score 10.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's easy. Yeah, just go score 10 runs, guys.
Stop not scoring, guys.
Just so that you guys know, listeners, we're being facetious, but
I hope that came through.
Yeah.
I don't know, Adam. Sweet Nick sounds pretty pessimistic. What can you say to cheer him up?
Sweet Nick, you're old and curmudgeonly now. That's why.
That's right. Yeah. That birthday's really done a number on you.
You go off to celebrate one birthday, and then this is what you give us. But happy birthday, sweet Nick.
Happy birthday, Nick. Adam, anything else you want to talk about before we leave?
No.
Okay. Okay, so you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and all podcatchers. Please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at BuntToTheGap, Facebook.com/BuntToTheGap, and on Google Plus, Google.com/+BuntToTheGap. Please email any questions you have for us to answer on air to podcast@BuntToTheGap.com. Please visit BuntToTheGap.com for any articles and analysis you might be looking for, and share the podcast with others who might enjoy it, and also encourage them to rate and review it on iTunes. We will see you next week, Blue Jays fans, and go Jays go.